call the order.
Andy Berg.
Present.
Aaron Decker.
Here.
John Franco.
Excuse.
John Poole.
Here.
Michael Splitsky.
Here.
David Hallman.
Just went that away.
He's here.
Okay. Citizen comments. Done. Chairperson comments. Real quick, unless we get something in, we'll do the meeting next month at 6:30, because all we have is the Corp Council budget done to deal with. And that way, it saves us all a little bit of meeting time in October.
Same night?
Same night.
Okay.
Just doing it, you know, give us an hour to go over that budget. Because, as usual, it's pretty simple. Any supervisor comments? I have no communications.
No.
Do you have anything?
None.
I'm sorry, what day did you say our office was?
Whatever the third Tuesday of the month is.
October 17th.
Approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Seeing no one else comments, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Alrighty. And as everyone knows, the budget has been basically put to bed, except for whatever vetoes the governor will do. So we'll find out what's going on county level on the budget.
Hello, this is Dan Barb.
Hi, Dan. This is Emily from the Legislative Committee. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. I have you on speakerphone with the committee here, so we can begin our discussion.
Great, great. I hope you're all doing well this evening.
Yes.
Good. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did Hintz,
go ahead.
Is now Gordon Hintz replacing Barca?
Yeah, by 2 o'clock today, the Assembly Democrats had their leadership election, and the Assembly Democratic Caucus elected Gordon Hintz as its replacement as minority leader today.
Okay. So what?
So that's breaking news out of Madison.
Mm-hmm. So let us know what's going on with the governor's budget when it comes to the counties and what we'll be facing this coming year, 2 years, I should say.
So, well, I think overall for counties, you know, with a pretty good budget, I'd say we identified four priorities, okay, 911 funding, child welfare funding, transportation funding, and the transportation piece I'll get into quite a bit because it's pretty complex, but we wanted to have long-term sustainable transportation funding for the transportation fund and all the programs it supports and support for some of our local programs, so we'll talk about that. And then also regional service delivery. We either wanted a standalone bill or try to get something in the budget allowing counties to share services and also devise standing committees that are able to function with regard to shared services. So we'll talk about some of those four priorities because we were successful on all four, so we're pretty pleased about that. So I'll start out with 911. So the budget did provide roughly $7 million to create a statewide 911 network. That's something, if you go back to the 2009 budget, at the time there was standalone money that was generated for the 911 system. That money got put into the general fund during the recession when there was a shortage of money, and money was siphoned off from the 911 system. We want to try and go back and create a statewide 911 system, and so this provides a path to doing that in terms of the creation of a statewide network. Critical first step towards upgrading our 911 system and replacing what we lost and making us whole. Doesn't totally make us whole. You know, we're quite a bit short, but we're certainly back on the right track on that. So we're pleased about that. That was a big success, just to sort of move the ball down the field. We've not really had much success in terms of 911 since 2009, since the budget, when we really took a hit on that. So this is a good start. On child welfare funding, the budget provided an additional $5 million for child welfare services and $3 million for in-home safety services, the in-home safety services program over the biennium. And this is the first increase for in the children and family aids appropriation since the appropriation was created. So it's good news, I'd say, also for child welfare funding. And then on transportation also, you know, and I work pretty, I'm the transportation person. That's one of my primary areas, transportation and environment and land use issues. And so on transportation, we had, like I said, two goals. You sort of have your segregated transportation fund, and that fund is supported by gas tax and also by vehicle registration fees. And we wanted to stabilize that fund because what's happened over time is that the cost to do projects, the cost to conduct work, the cost to do maintenance has gone up, but the money coming into that transportation fund has remained stagnant. It hasn't increased. In fact, as cars become more fuel efficient, as new technologies come into play, you know, as we fail to find efficiencies for transportation, which is one of the ways we're going to free up more money, essentially, it becomes tougher to pay for the programs that the transportation program supports. So that's the first component. The second component is some of our local programs, general transportation aids, which I'm sure you're all aware of. Wanted to get an increase in that, and we did. We will be going in this budget from 98.4 million statewide annually up to 111.9 million dollars, so about a $13 million increase for GTA, significant increase for the counties, and that money is allocated statewide, county by county, to be used on the county trunk highway system. And that money, there's a combination or a formula the state uses to divvy up that money between the counties. A lot of it has to do with population, lane miles, expenditures by highway departments, labor costs, things like that. So it's a pretty big increase. Also, we got some of the first LRIP increases in quite a while since the program was created in 1998. LRIP is the Local Road Improvement Program, and the county component of that is CHIP and CHIP-D. CHIP is the County Highway Improvement Program, and CHIP-D is the discretionary component of that program. So both of those programs saw significant increases. Also, the Local Bridge Improvement Program saw an increase of $10 million in each year of the biennium, which is very good news. And then finally, in the second year of the biennium, there was a $33.7 million increase for routine maintenance agreements for maintenance the counties perform on the state system, interstate system, and the state trunk highway system. So all important components in terms of what we're trying to do. And transportation was a big deal, and I'd say you could look at the transportation issue as being twofold. On one side is the overall transportation fund and trying to get more money for that. On that end, as a member of the coalition, transportation coalition, trying to seek more money, we were not successful. But in terms of county-specific or local-specific programs, we were very successful. So it's sort of a twofold, two-prong operation on transportation. And I'd say on our end, on our prong, our local prong, very successful overall in terms of transportation, still more work to be done. And then the regional service delivery, we talked about that, and this has been something that I think a lot of the senators have looked at. And I'll use the example of two counties, Clark County and Jackson County, for a long time. They've long shared a highway commissioner. He's now retiring. His name was Randy Anderson, but he worked for two counties. And what we've said is, based on current state law, if you have a standing committee in your county, and a lot of counties, they'll have a transportation committee or a highway committee, a public works committee, whatever it may be. The state mandates that for transportation services, you have a standing committee. And what we wanted to do is have the statutes changed to allow some of our certain standing committees to combine or have maybe four members from one county or four members from another county. If we're sharing a position, if we're sharing a highway commissioner, it would make sense that the highway committee would be a joint Jackson Joint Clark Highway Committee to ensure that the committee reflects the needs in both counties. And so the sharing of services and the ability to do that is something that we want to change in statutes, and we were also successful with that component. So those were our four main goals, and so we pretty successful there. And again, transportation being the big one, still more work to do there, but that's kind of where we're at. Some of the programs that I think that are worth mentioning include the County Veterans Service Officer, CVSO grants, and that's been changed back to a block grant program. There's a lot of consternation, I think, in the past about how the Department of Veteran Affairs has run that program and how rigid they have been. And so we're getting some flexibility back for the counties. The new secretary has met with our executive director, Mark O'Connell, and worked out an agreement on that. And so that's good news. And then also county conservation staffing and cost sharing grants, significant increase. That program has been funded on an annual basis of just under $8.1 million annually, and that's support that counties get for doing conservation work, phosphorus controls, runoff controls, things like that. And there's been a $900,000 annual increase in that program. Annual funding will go from just under $8.1 million to just under $9 million. So that's a significant increase as well. And it's an increase in the base. So pretty successful in terms of where we ended up in terms of county conservation staffing, cost sharing grant increase in funding. So good news all around on that. So those are some of the good things. Some of the things that people had consternation about, I think, particularly at the end of this budget, one relates to an aggregate piece or statewide standardized language regulating aggregate and taking away local control and essentially making the policy, the state policy on regulating aggregates statewide and standardized. That was vetoed. That was vetoed. Initially, there had been talk about expanding that aggregate piece to include frac sand mining, but essentially that did not happen. And then subsequent to that, the governor chose to veto the aggregate piece. We had been in discussions about what the statewide standardized language might look like. It was sort of an efficiency component of the budget, and we did tell the speaker that if he had worked with us and took some of our suggestions, it would be something that we could live with. And of course, in addition to getting a lot of our transportation aid increases, so ultimately we had the discussions. It was inserted into the budget for a short time, and then of course ultimately vetoed by the governor. Expansion into the frac sand area, as it relates to air, water, and blasting controls, were something that we were not going to ever be able to support. So that's sort of where we're at. Those are some of the highlights, and I want to turn it over to you guys and have discussions and take questions. And I'll let you know that I do work, I do have some familiarity with all the issues at WCA, but primarily transportation, environment, and land use issues. That's my issue area. But I'm happy to take any questions or engage any discussions you want to have.
Well, first of all, when you talked about combining county commissions and that, does that mm-hmm. also deal with what's been going on between Ozaukee and Washington? With them trying
I think what Ozaukee and Washington are looking at doing is combining counties. So, no, that's sort of a separate issue. They're talking about combining into what would be the 71st county. We got 72. They'd have one county. So that's a separate issue, I'd say.
Okay.
What this does is let's say, for example, your county would choose to share a department or maybe you'd share a service. You then could also combine the committee for that service and have a joint committee. So something like that. We're talking about sharing of services, not combining political subdivisions. That's what Ozaukee and Washington have been discussing.
Okay. Anyone want to start with questions for him, or?
I know that funding for roads is a big issue. What was like the county, the Wisconsin Counties Association stand on how to raise revenues? I know they put in there a hybrid fee on hybrid
rates
and things like that. What else, was the Counties Association not getting involved in that?
Say that again. I didn't hear your last comment. I'm sorry.
Or was the county's association not involved in that?
So we have been advocating, like I said, long-term sustainable funding for the Segregated Transportation Fund and all the programs it supports, whether it be transit, whether it be some of the majors project. I know a big issue in the Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee area is the I-94 North-South Corridor. I think some of that got addressed through Foxconn, I believe. But ultimately, we are support. Zoo interchange is a big issue in southeastern Wisconsin, and there are other projects. We're supportive of funding at all, and how to pay for it. We don't feel it's our role, nor do we feel it'd be appropriate for WCA or any particular outside group to come and say, "Hey, you should fund it, and here's how you should do it." We do feel everything should be funded, and we will say that publicly. But we are not going to tell them how to do that. That's the job of the elected officials. That's why we elect people to make those decisions. So all we're saying is, hey, you've made commitments in terms of transportation. You've made commitments on various projects, whether it be I-94 north-south, in east-west, whether it be Zoo Interchange, whether it be the St. Croix crossing on the other side of the state, whether it be Highway 23, Fond du Lac, Sheboygan. All those things are commitments that the state has made in our projects that are in the queue that we are saying you should fund, and you should fund it on time. And you should help your locals, because we deserve our fair share of the gas tax and vehicle registration fee as well. You should fund all those things, but it's your job as an elected official. You chose to run for office, and you ran for office to solve problems. And so you, as an elected official, as a state assemblyman or as a state senator, should figure out how to do it. That's why we elected you, and same with the governor, of course.
With the local roads expansion, because they've been talking about expanding two roads here in Kenosha County, Highway 50 and 158 from the interstate in. Is that back on the table that they're going to start looking at that again?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with those specific local projects or whether or not that's in the budget. That may be something that those could be smaller projects that are part of what's known as the State Highway Rehab Program. So I don't know if that's in the queue or not. That might be something I could look into in terms of discussion with DOT. It could be also something that's in, I mean, I don't know. I just have to say I don't know about that package. Okay. I check with DOT. I can check with DOT on specific projects, but those particular roads, I've not heard any specifics.
50 was pushed back.
I know 50 was pushed back.
Like 2023?
They've been changing the numbers all the time,
yeah,
on those two roads.
Originally, okay, it was 18.
Could you check on that and then let me know in the Dells? And I'll pass
it on. Certainly.
To me.
Yeah, I can check on. So you said it's a Highway 50, and you said 121?
158.
158. Do you email me those? I don't know if you have my email or not.
If worse comes to worse, I'll look off the website. I'll send
it
to you.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay. Okay, Supervisor, you look like you have something you want to get out, and I don't know. Ask.
Go ahead and ask questions.
Yeah, Damon Holman here. Thank you for making time for us this evening. I heard you.
Hey, Damon, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I heard you mention two different forms of consolidation, and it piqued my interest. I have a buddy of mine who's another county supervisor in the northwestern portion of the state, and he says his county loses 10% population per year. And he's a young cat. I asked him what he was going to do, if he was going to stick around or flee. He said he didn't know. So to hear you talk about two different forms of consolidation, I guess the question I have, and I know this doesn't go directly to the budget necessarily, but how much of a trend is this? Does this kind, in some ways I mean both forms, does it look like in future budgets that there'll be more of this?
Consolidation of services. You know, I wouldn't say that there was a ton of pressure. It's just something I think, you know, through this, I think a lot of this derives from the transportation discussions. And if you followed them carefully, which I assume you guys did, one of the things you heard here in Madison is, gee, you know, we really got to find efficiencies. We really got to find, you know, we got to squeeze everything we can out of the turnip. You know, we got to squeeze every penny we can out of every dollar. And so, essentially, through brainstorming, I think through our transportation coalition, one of the things WCA came up with was this idea of consolidating services, in consolidating departments. Regardless of what the service may be, maybe it's a highway department, maybe it's a human service, maybe it's a sheriff's department. Those are all things we want to have the option to do. In a particular county, you know, you'd have the option under this proposal to consolidate services or share services with another county, and we want counties to have the option. And whether it's a future trend or not, I would say generally no. I mean, I'd say on a small level, there is some consolidation, but generally counties have their own sheriff's departments, they have their own highway departments. Even in the case of Clark and Jackson County, they essentially share one highway commissioner, they still have separate departments. So is it a trend? I don't know if it's a huge trend. And I'd say that the situation in terms of consolidating counties, when you talk about Ozaukee and Washington County, is pretty unique. Because we've had 72 counties in Wisconsin for a long, long time, and Washington County has come upon some financial hardship. It's one of the reasons why they indicated they want to consolidate with Ozaukee, because the new county wouldn't just inherit Washington County, they inherit all its financial problems too. So, you know, whether it's a long-term trend, I don't think so, but I do think that you may, with a more conservative legislature and with a more conservative governor, you're going to hear about wanting to consolidate services and get the biggest bang for the buck for the taxpayer, I guess. That's what I think the current leadership in the state is asking us to do. But rather it's a trend in terms of having big departments consolidate, I don't think so.
Okay. I know I had talked about this with somebody a couple years ago. They said if you want people to come after you with pitchforks and torches from across the state, pursue consolidation, particularly among school districts. So thank you.
No, I agree. Absolutely. You know, if you go to rural, and I'm from rural Wisconsin, the school district's the heart of the, you know, people have a lot of pride in their schools. People have a lot of pride in their county. People have a lot of pride in their towns. There have been talk about, you know, regionalizing services and doing away with some towns and you know, just people, there's tradition in a lot of areas of the state. People are proud of their school and their town and their county. So yeah, I think it's you're not going to see a whole lot of consolidation in terms of changing political subdivisions and things like that, at least in my opinion.
Thank you.
Sure.
Go back. Do you have something else, sir?
You can.
Okay, I was just confused if you had something.
I did, actually.
Go.
Is this kind of the back door to fixing our RTA problem?
You see the consolidation of services?
In a way, yeah.
No, I mean, the only way, and I got to tell you this, you know, the only way to fix the RTA problem, Regional Transit Authority, is essentially you're going to need to have a governor that's willing to be supportive of the concept is going to have to put it in his or her budget. And then they're going to have to bargain with the legislature, if in fact it is a Republican legislature, to keep it in there. Because, I mean, I just think the Republicans, when, you know, you had RTAs, I think in the Eau Claire area, Fox Valley, Racine, Kenosha, and you had a series of RTAs, and after the 2010 elections, you had sort of a sweep where Democrats lost control of the governor's office and both houses of legislature in that 2010 Republican wave. And with that, the Republicans came in, and they're just not, I don't want to say all of them, I don't want to speak in broad terms, but generally the leadership just has not been supportive of RTAs. And in their budget in 2011, they did away with RTA funding, and that remains the case today. So, you know, I guess for RTAs to come back, you're going to have to see a change, and which eventually you'll have a Democrat elected. There's only two political parties. Eventually, I expect that they'll win an election, and once that happens, that individual will probably try and resuscitate the RTAs. And if it's a Democratic governor, they'll let's assume then it's a Democratic governor and the legislature stays Republican. In that case, they'd have to negotiate and bargain in terms of RTAs. But I think that's what the situation is.
Thank you.
Sure.
Regional taxing authorities.
Why don't we have youth and governance, and we're just explaining what RTAs were. So, go
sure.
Back to 911. I couldn't catch how much of an increase that is for total all funding.
They put $7 million annually. $7 million in each year. So there's 2 years in the biennium, and they put $7 million in both years.
To be divided up by all 72 counties.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right. Well, and I gotta tell you, I did not work on this issue. I just, you know, I've been part of the staff meetings on it. But there's out there is what's known as PSAPs.
Okay.
You've heard of them. I'm just not sure how that money's divided up. But because I know that there are a lot of municipalities who have participated in the 911 program too. And so Marcy Rainbolt, she's our new lobbyist, and she deals with courts, corrections, county organ personnel. She worked on this issue and got it in. And I know she worked with a coalition with some of the cellular phone companies, and they were successful. But I can only tell you that we got $7 million in each year of the budget. How it's divvied up, I'm not sure. But you can include that in the email, and I'll get back to you on exactly what the structure of that's going to look like.
Okay.
What's the anticipated or dollar amount that you guys were hoping for?
Anything.
Okay.
We just haven't had any progress on it.
Okay.
Since 2009. What happened was this money was shifted to the general fund back when the recession hit. The state got desperate, and it was just sort of shifted to try and cover just basic services. And
well, didn't
now
they
we're out of the recession, so
didn't
we're,
they institute
we're
the tax on cell phones at that time?
Program. What's that?
That's when they instituted the tax on cell phones, the 75 cent per line tax, and said it was a 911 tax and then didn't fund 911.
Yep, that's right.
Right?
That's right. Okay. It ended up going to the general fund. That's right. We're trying to get the money back. Once it gets in the general fund, you know, and all of a sudden, you got to have some extra money to take it away, otherwise, because everyone else is scrambling for all the GPR they can get.
Right.
Okay, does anyone else have questions on? But it's a,
okay, well, I guess, can you explain, you were talking about welfare was the word you used. What programs were funded, or what block grants, or what area of?
I got some notes on that. So Sarah in our office has worked on that, highly successful this year. So budget provides an additional $5 million annually, so that's both years of the budget, for child welfare services, okay, so for child welfare, and then $3 million for the in-home safety services program over the biennium. So child welfare funding increases the first increase in the Children and Family AIDS appropriation since this program was created. So that's what those two programs.
Is that a special population?
Child welfare services,
like,
and in-home safety.
Special needs, or is it just a general?
General.
Okay.
Anybody else have anything while he's on the phone?
Last question.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Isabella.
I'm happy to take your questions.
I'm Isabella. I'm a member of Youth and Governance, and I'm a student, so I'm wondering what the budget on education is pertaining to me. Like, is that something
so
that's...
So, you talk about K-12 education?
Yes.
Okay, so there was some significant increases in K-12 education funding this year. WCA, from a county perspective, I guess education is not a county issue, but just as someone who follows the budget, I guess we're aware that because there's been additional GPR funding available, there were major increases in that budget. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but I can tell you that it was significant, and a lot of it is making up for past cuts. Over the past few years, we've had recessions, we've had problems. Back in the 2009-11 budget, there were cuts to K-12 education, sparsity aids for rural programming. All those programs got cut, and I think slowly they've gotten some back, so they're trying to get back to even. They had a pretty big increase this year, so it's good news here for education at this time in terms of K-12 funding. There is some controversy because there's some additional funding that's been added in terms of statewide voucher program and some additional eligibility added as well, which I think will, that's a part of this increase. Most of the increase is going to K-12 public schools, I'd say the vast majority, but there is some additional eligibility for some of the voucher programs statewide, which will certainly not make some of the advocates for public K-12 education happy, but overall they're happy because they got a pretty big increase.
Does the state dictate how the budget towards education is spent, or is that up to the counties and the school boards?
Well, the counties don't do education, as your schools do.
Yeah, that's right.
So there are, I think, state and federal guidelines related to how money is spent in the very regulated system, of course. So there's strength attached to everything, but essentially I think it's just our per pupil aids have gone up pretty significantly in this budget, so it's good news, and the school districts will have more flexibility. So it's good news for school districts, I'd say, around the state. And it'll also help property owners try to keep their property tax down. School boards will work on trying to, you know, they'll have some more assistance from the state, so they won't be squeezed so hard, and it'll help property taxpayers as well.
Thank you.
David, and then you.
There is a statewide funding formula that is super duper complicated. Like,
yeah.
No one understands it.
Yes.
But they
that formula, you mentioned that a lot of that's based on. I used to work in the legislature, so particularly in rural areas, what you'd have is you'd have declining enrollment. Then, you know, the district that I worked the representative I work for, he represented a district sort of in western Wisconsin, and he was close to the Twin Cities. And so you had wealthy people from the Twin Cities who would come and build homes on top of the bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River valley, and they'd jack up the median property value, and then we'd get less sparsity aid, and as a result, the property tax would go through the roof. People down in the villages and the farmers would go nuts and be like, what is going on with these increases? This is crazy. And it is probably a problem, I think, with the sparsity aid funding formula. And but yes, it is very complex. And
I did hear that they're going to try to tackle that and revamp that.
Yeah, I you know, they really should. And I think even more, they certainly put some more money into it, which is great. But I think in addition to that, they probably should have a study committee look really deep into that. And it's very complex. So a lot of people, probably former superintendents, former legislators, they probably need a, it'd be great if you could have a bipartisan group that looked at the school funding aid formulas and figure out, you know, a more, maybe a simpler, more fair model that's out there.
David? Can you talk a little bit about how the county's made out with UW Extension in this budget?
Yeah, you know, so UW Extension, I think there was no change in funding. There was about a 10% cut in the 15-17, the previous budget. And right now, I think from that previous cut, the UW Extension is still going through a series of restructuring. They had a surplus of money from before that they're using, from what I understand, to cover some of the current costs. But they're looking to make changes to respond to the cut they had to deal with last time. They've been able to cover it thus far because they've been efficiently running. They've had a surplus, but I believe that as it stands, they're trying to restructure, and I think they're sort of in the same place they were in the past. Same numbers, as I should say, the 15-17 budget's the same as the 17-19 budget in terms of the extension funding.
Anything else from the supervisors, or? When do you think the governor will actually finish his vetoes and sign it?
Well, I know he's deliberating his vetoes. I mean, I think, you know, what's going on right now, it's kind of interesting. So the Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Voss, the Speaker and the Senate President have to sign the budget document. And what happened was is the Assembly passed the budget first. It then went to the Senate, and so what happened was is when the Assembly passed the budget, the Speaker had agreement with the Majority Leader on what they were going to do, and so then what happened is the budget went to the Senate after the Assembly passed it, and the Senate Majority Leader said, "Well, I don't have the votes. I got some problems with some members, Robin, but okay, we're going to pass this document as is." So some of the three senators that were holding out went and spoke to the governor about some of the items they didn't like, and some of those items related to the Fed swap program, the federal exchange program, swapping federal dollars for state dollars. It's something we've advocated for that's in the budget document. They want that enacted sooner. Also, prevailing wage reform. They wanted state prevailing wage reform to be enacted sooner. And a series of other items, the public finance authority language, they wanted that vetoed. They wanted the aggregate language vetoed as well. And I think a whole host of things that they asked for. And so the governor made some changes, promised some changes to them through his veto pen. Well, that some of those changes that he promised has caught the ire of the Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Voss, and so he is refusing right now to sign on behalf of the Assembly until he gets a meeting with the governor. Probably maybe talking about some of the vetoes he's looking at doing.
Okay, so we're still looking at a ways away then.
No, because I think he can only hold out for so long, and him signing is only procedural. The body has passed it.
Right.
He's not an executive. He doesn't make a decision on behalf of the body. The body votes collectively. So there's only so much time he can hold out, and we're sort of on uncharted territory because I don't know if he. I mean, we just hope he'll sign. I mean, you just kind of hope he would just sign, and you know, he shouldn't be making a decision on behalf of the body. You would think, you know, the body voted for it, but yet, you know, he's upset, wants to meet with the governor before he signs, but there's only so long he could hold out, and if it gets to be a week or longer, I think all of a sudden the press is going to say, well, is just one person running our assembly, or what's going on here? So I know he's unhappy with some of the vetoes that were promised.
Okay. Anything else from anyone? Okay. Well, then, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me. We hope it was a good meeting. Hope it was informative.
That's what we're looking for, is where the budget was standing right now, because we knew about a few weeks ago it was going to be close when we were meeting tonight to it being signed.
Oh, sure. It's very close.
So,
thank you. We sort of have a framework of what was done, and I'll tell you this, too. Say hello to your county executive, Jim Cruiser, a good guy. I've known him a long time from my days back in the legislature, and he's a good WCA member, great guy, and send him our best wishes. And
you'll probably see him before I do in the Dells.
What's that?
You'll probably see him before I do.
Yeah, in the Dells, probably true.
So, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye now.
Close to adjourn.
I was just making sure that it was turned off.
Yes, it's all done.
I was just say, at least it's a good budget for the counties this time. So, and there's a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, motion to adjourn. All in favor, state by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
I was 4 blocks away stuffing slightly salty broccoli into my mouth, and I apologize.